welcome to episode 13 of The Coriolis Effect, Year Zero. I'm Dave.
And I'm Matthew, and this is the second of our special episodes of The Coriolis Effect, continuing our interview with the guys from Fria Lagan when we went to Sweden at the beginning of the month. But before we get into that, we've got a couple of announcements to make.
We have.
When we return to normal service, we'll have been doing the Coriolis Effect for about 8 months, but we're also getting close to the end of the year, and we thought this was a good time to ask our listeners what they thought of the podcast so far and what they might like to recommend in terms of developing the podcast as we go into 2018. So I've created a survey, and if you haven't already seen links to that survey on social media and replied, if you're listening now, we'd really love you to take a little bit of time to reply to that survey. It should only take you about 4 or 5 minutes. It's very few questions, and it's hopefully really easy to get your voice heard.
Yeah, I've already gone and done it, and made sure that I put down that I'm the best games master, and clearly that everybody wants to hear more of me, I'm sure.
Oh God, yeah, you're right. Now, you see, I didn't actually include there's a question that says what would you like to hear less of, and I forgot to put the Dave option on that one, so
well, if that came up a lot, I know it'd just be you going over and over and over again to click the Dave
yes,
button.
Yes, it would be. Yeah. Okay. So we'll call truce on that one, but I will wipe your answers clean so you don't bias the survey. I want to hear our listeners here. I don't want to hear what you think.
That's
about
true.
The program.
Likewise.
Now, it's a slightly complicated web address to read out, so I'm not going to read it to you now, but do look on the show notes, the description that comes with your podcast, and you'll see a link there. Follow that link. It'll take you to my university server, and the survey's there. And as I say, it's a really simple survey to answer and a great opportunity to tell us what we should be doing in year two. Even if it's keep it the same as year one, we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. The other bit of news we've got, obviously, when we're recording this, we are a few days away from a Dragon Meet, and this will go out before Dragon Meet. So we will be there. Both of us will be running games in the morning, games of Coriolis. But we are also going to be setting up in the podcast zone first thing. And then we'll be found there after lunch when we've finished the games we're going to run.
If you want to express your opinions, especially if you want to say, yes, we really do want to hear less of Dave, come to the podcast zone to tell us that. And I'll be bringing a big pad of paper to write that down.
I think there was something a little while ago on G Plus from Chris saying that the only way to for us to decide who's the best GM is for us to have a fight. So I'm up for that if you are, Matt.
Well, we could do that. I've beaten Andy in a fight. I think I could beat you.
Yeah, that's not really saying much, though, is it? I mean, oh, yeah. If Andy was really trying, he would kill all of us before we've even started. Yeah. But,
come to, I should say, hashtag podcast zone at Dragon Meet 2017 in London, if you're able to come to London. As you said, you might want to join one of our games,
please,
Coriolis, or see us in the podcast zone. And thanks to you, Dave, we will be walking around easily recognisable with our brand new Coriolis Effect t-shirts.
Exactly. So, you'll be able to spot us really easily. We're the dashing, good-looking guys in their Coriolis Effect t-shirts, with the exception that my brother...
I thought that was your brother who is also coming.
So my brother might be there. He'll be wearing one as well, but don't mistake him for me or Matthew. So come and say hello. It'd be great to meet as many of you as possible. And as Matthew says, you can tell us what you think to our faces. Please be kind.
Yes. Talking of being kind, actually, in the next sequence of the interview with Fria Lagan, they are very kind to the Coriolis fan community, particularly on G+. They single out that one for offering them really great feedback, because if you remember at the end of the last segment of the interview that we played, they were complaining that they hardly have any time for role-playing anymore, And it's a bit of a challenge, particularly to play test the games that they're publishing. So let's kick off this second episode's worth of interviews with the continuation of that discussion.
I was going to say, yeah, why don't we let our listeners listen to what the Free League and guys had to say?
That's a good idea. That's what we're here for.
So we should shut up.
Yeah, we should shut up.
So let's.
You shut up first.
No, you shut up.
Okay. We going to play it now?
Yes, we are.
I play tested your stuff a little bit. Yeah. You tend to play test like the individual sections of rules or
we play like combats and so on. And
exactly.
We don't have time to like play a full campaign. We play just individual rules.
Yeah.
And then we're kind of dependent on crowdsourcing for playtesting. So,
I mean, for Tales from the Loop, I wrote essentially three adventures, I think, during the alpha phase. And then I playtested them with three different groups of, like, random friends, just to kind of see how the system would evolve over those adventures. And I remember we did, like, rules edits after each session, essentially.
Yeah.
So it evolved over time.
Did you ever find a rules edit that you amended after one game, you then wanted to amend back again after another one?
It happens a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not in Tales from the Loop.
Yeah, Tales not so much, actually. No. We did some like editing back and forth, but like minor stuff. But
we actually had exactly that experience recently. We're doing
a
board game
secret?
Project. Yeah, it's a secret. I can't say what it is, but
I'm just reminding you it's a secret.
Have another drink.
Yeah. But we changed some rules based on the first playtesting, and the second, or this is like third time, the game just completely collapsed. Mm. It was like nothing worked. It was like it was going backwards. It was very interesting to see that a few small changes could suddenly just ruin the whole construction.
Yeah.
So in that case, we just went back, rewinded the tape, and then started doing it. But board games are, in a way, more difficult than role-playing games.
They have to function out of the box.
Yeah.
They have to really be solid. Yeah.
You don't get so much fan amendment of the rules, do you, I guess, in...
No, I think that's a good thing, I guess, with like the fan communities, like the G+ community for Coriolis.
Yeah.
It's a lot of constructive feedback going on there, which is like, I mean, as a game creator, it's like a dream. I mean, if that would be the same as for like Board Game Geek, like for board game creators, everyone's like, oh, well, maybe that's wrong, but I'm doing it this way.
I'm printing my own cards.
Yeah. We love you.
Whatever. But it is cool. It's very similar to that's community feeling is. Role-playing games are almost unique in having that, I feel.
It's
you really can mod it.
This positive community feeling, I think, is really cool.
With my friends, we play a lot of co-op games when it comes to board games. And with co-op games, since you're playing together, you're kind of in that space, that where you actually can modify it. We're currently running a Massive Darkness campaign from first quest to last quest, and we are modding the quest rules as we go.
Yeah, I heard it's been a bit of
It's not that good.
No, it's not that good.
Like the core of the game for a single mission is cool, but the they haven't playtested the quests enough.
And you're modding it so you win.
No, we're modding. that was the core problem. We played like two scenarios, and we were like over. Like we leveled up too much.
Yeah, it's too easy.
And that was heartbreaking to some of the players actually, because suddenly like someone's armor had to be thrown away, and they had to scale down, level down, and all that. It's like we had a lot of debates around that. But it's like it's gonna be better for all of us. We have 12 missions to play here, 12 quests to play. It's gonna be fine.
I want to touch, this is a bit of a diversion, I'm sorry David, but I'm intrigued. Obviously, we're not going to ask you about your top secret board game project directly, but we are going to try and eat some clues out of you. Board games are having a real renaissance. They're in America particularly, they're all about the Euro games, and Asmodee, you know, have made so much money out of board games that they've bought Fantasy Flight in America, and as Devium in the UK, and they're really expanding company. Has that been the same in Sweden? Because I feel it's a kind of Franco-German thing.
The games are big here, but there's no Swedish companies producing them. There's, I mean, the games are. I mean, you saw the science fiction bookstore in Gamla Stan. there's a big board gaming section.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people buy the same games. It's a big renaissance in that way. Mm. But there's no big Swedish producers of board games, and that's.
But it could be Fria Liga.
No, but seriously,
I think the secret's out the bag now.
I mean, it's no secret that we're looking to kind of expand, because just not just be dependent on role playing games, because it's a very niche hobby.
Yes,
Board games is much much bigger. It's so we're looking to expand into that.
I think one of the things that just about everybody suffers from, and really comes out clearly, really clearly from the Fria Liga guys, is how hard it can be to find time to actually play the game that we love. And I guess one of the downsides for Niels, Costa, Ricard and the others is that by making the game their business, as well as something they've loved, they actually get so much less time to play it. And I thought it was really interesting that they were saying, you know, they get time maybe to playtest elements of the rules, but they don't get to play campaigns or full blown scenarios, which is it's quite, you wouldn't, you know, you'd want to still try and find time to do that, but we all know how difficult it can be to find time in busy lives when we've got jobs to do, we've got, you know, families and other commitments. So finding good ways of managing that can be really difficult. But we only get to play
maybe once every couple of months at best.
And I mean, and that's a significant increase on how we were maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when we might play 3 or 4 times a year. And then we all said, wait, hang on, let's play more often, because interestingly enough, you're 50 already. I'm approaching 50. And I started doing a calculation of, if we play 3 times a year, how many more games do we have ever in our lives? And it was really quite...
Oh, God, don't have that.
It was quite a shocking and horrible thing. Well, it was good, because it opened my eyes to the fact that, hang on, this is something that I love doing, and it's a game that I love playing with you, Andy, and Tone. And we need to make more of it. And one thing that we did last weekend to make more of it was have a weekend away in the depths of Norfolk in a fabulous 16th century our old yeoman's farmhouse, where we locked ourselves, well, didn't quite lock ourselves in, but we lit the fire, we played games, we went for walks, we went to the pub, we drank beer, and had an absolute...
played more games.
And we played multiple games and had a fabulous time. And, you know, it was such a good idea for us to do that, because it's a really good way of chucking in a load of really excellent gaming time with very close friends and family, which was a real delight. I had such a great time. It was...
Yeah, well, I didn't bring any of my family. You, of course, brought your brother, because he's one of the friends that we play with.
Yeah,
of course. But, yeah, it was great. So, we arrived on Saturday... Sorry, we arrived
Friday.
On Friday night. We played from the moment that Andy joined us, late, as usual, right through
until you fell asleep, actually.
Yeah, I fell asleep GMing pretty much around midnight, but I have been driving up there. Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to note that for my listeners that the level of GMing quality went up when you fell asleep. I thought it was really remarkable.
Oh, thank you. one of the things I really enjoyed that. So over the course of the weekend, we played 4 games. We each ran a scenario. I started off with Coriolis, of course, on Friday, and that ran through till... well, almost till Saturday evening, when Andy took over with Pendragon, and we played that till about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
and then after a bit of a nap, you kicked off the second Simba Room episode, which we've recorded. We might well add that to our Simba Room actual plays.
Yeah, we also recorded the Coriolis game. So
I'm a bit worried by that one. I fear we only used one mic on that one,
we did.
And I fear I might have knocked it onto the wrong setting at some point.
Okay.
So
we'll have to see how that one comes out. Yeah,
broadcastable, as it were. And then we finished off with a great game of Legend of the Five Rings from Tony. But what I really liked about that was there was no pressure on having to finish a scenario in time for people to drive home.
Yeah.
For whatever to. Go to bed to we just make their kids tea.
We just had to finish the scenarios in time for us to go to the pub and trough.
Have another scenario.
And before everyone fell asleep. but then even then it didn't matter so much because we just rolled into bed and then got up the next morning and cracked on from where we'd left off.
Yeah, and letting the role playing breathe. Mm. I mean, you know, I think we're pretty good at we're pretty free form GMs, all of us. So, you know, the players can take the carefully prepared scenario in whatever direction they want and devote as much time as they want to going shopping or whatever. And
on that shopping point,
we're good at letting that happen, but actually having the luxury to really let it happen and just see what happened was gorgeous. I loved it. I'm going to do it again.
Yes, I think we all are, hopefully. But the interesting point about shopping is you're such a stingy GM that when he gave us a bit of money in that Coriolis episode, we all thought, whoa, it's bargain time. Let's go and buy stuff because we don't normally get the opportunity in your scenarios. You're not normally that generous, are you, Matt?
I think if you recall, we can look at the recording, but I think actually you went shopping before I gave you the money.
obviously, we're working on credit, obviously.
Interestingly, of course, you're not going to get much chance to spend money now, are you? Because towards the end of the scenario, I spent all the darkness points.
Well, we had given you a lot. And
yeah, actually, I failed to spend all the darkness points because I made the scenario so challenging with my darkness points that you kept praying and giving me even more back again. So yeah. I think I've still got about 7 left over.
Well, and you were throwing them out like confetti at the end there. And
I was. I really got darkness crazy at the end of that.
I think whilst we're still contemplating the possibility of some of it being worthy of broadcasting, I won't explain the ending.
Yeah, we can't spoil it, I guess.
But the next episode 14, if we're not going to be playing that as an actual play, we'll let everyone know what happened. It was a very exciting difficult end. So it was a very good scenario, as always.
But I guess people don't want to listen to us talking about our, well, they do want to listen to us talking about our games, but only, as you say, at the appointed time. So
yeah, I agree.
Before we go back to the interview, I want to ask you what your thoughts are on the scoop we heard that Free Elegan are thinking of getting into board games.
Well, firstly, it was a bit of a surprise, actually. I hadn't thought that might be the direction they were going to take. Excellent. If they bring the same sort of imagination and quality to board games, then I fully expect that they're going to produce some pretty good stuff. Interesting that, you know, they are keeping their cards very close to their chest at the moment, which is entirely understandable at this point. Don't want to give too much away whilst it's still in the generation and the evolution of the games. But really looking forward to seeing what that looks like, and maybe if we get another invite back, we can go and interview them and talk about that another opportunity. And maybe even play a prototype if they're happy for us to do that.
They might let us do that. Yes,
they might. You never know.
They were keeping mum about it. We tried hard. We plied them with beer, but they weren't giving us any of their secrets away.
I'll just correct that. They plied themselves with beer. and they plied us with beer. We didn't buy very much beer that evening at all.
Oh, you're right, actually.
Which is another element of their generosity for us, you know, towards us on our visit. So they plied themselves with beer, and even then they kept their secrets to themselves.
They kept their mouths shut. So we haven't even got any secrets to tell you if you come and greet us at Dragon Meet.
No,
they
exactly.
Didn't tell us anything, even when the mics are off.
There are no secrets, unfortunately. Well,
but
there
when
are,
the mics are
there
on,
are secrets, but
we talked a little bit about how. Well, particularly, we feel we're living in a golden age of gaming.
You're absolutely right about the golden age, Matthew, because I think for us, there are, you know, not only is this a golden age of some brilliant, new, original, exciting, fabulous games that we're really enjoying, and we've got too many to play right now, but also it's a golden age, I think, for me personally, because I'm role-playing more than ever. I'm spending more of my time thinking about, enjoying, talking about, playing role-playing games and the games that I love. And for me, and I think for us, it's a golden age as well in terms of the amount of time and effort and fun we're getting out of them.
Oh yeah, so we broached that subject, but we also went back in time with them. Let's listen to the main part of the interview.
For me, I've said this to Dave quite often, this is a golden age of gaming.
Yeah.
Because I really do see this almost breaking out of the niche market.
Yeah.
And lots of people, lots of young people. I play with a group in a shop and they're all in their 20s.
Mm.
And, you know, we've got guys in the army and stuff like that who I'd never imagined would have been...
Yeah, the spirit has shifted.
Because
go back 20 years, I wouldn't have said to people at work, oh, I play D&D on the weekends.
No.
Never ever.
No.
Now, I'm quite happy to talk about it.
It's not a big deal anymore.
I don't care what they think.
Doesn't feel like there is a nerd stigma anymore, right?
No. No.
It's almost the opposite. It's almost becoming cool. I mean, I know friends, I work a little bit in the music industry as well, I know friends from there that thought RPGs was super nerdy like 10 years ago, and now they're like, oh, you're the guy that works with Mutant. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Ka-ching!
Yeah.
Talking of Mutant.
Yeah.
Well, Mutant Year Zero, actually. I think you mentioned it earlier, Costas. The Year Zero engine, as it's being referred to now, how did that come about? What was the genesis behind that? Because, I mean, my first experience of it was playing Mutant Year Zero, which I picked up from Orc's Nest. In just before Christmas in 2014 or 15. Had never heard of it before. Total impulse buy. It's now brought me to the point where I'm sat in Stockholm with you guys talking about all of this stuff.
You know the story, right?
No, but Thomas liked writing rules. He's always done that. Well, everybody's done RPGs, has written their own system or something like it. But he started when he wasn't satisfied with the... Mutant, and did something called Version Zero, which was more gritty, down to earth.
Was that very different from the original Mutant rules then?
Yeah.
It's much more indie influence.
Indie influence, and it had also part of Fate, part of Gumshoe, I think.
Yeah,
in
Gumshoe,
And then he sort of refined it over a year by himself. And then when we had published Fall of Winter, we were discussing, should we give out Mercy of the Icons module for Coriolis, or should we do something
else?
It's
like 5 years ago, it's still not published.
Yeah.
It's coming.
So, it's going to be really good, isn't it?
We argued a lot, and then we decided to do Mutant instead.
Well, the true story, actually, we failed to get the license for Drakar and Mårner, which is the biggest.
Right.
There's two big licenses in Sweden, Drakar and Mårner and Mutant. We actually kind of got the license for Drakar and Mårner, but we backed out because it was a bad deal. And then our backup plan was Mutant. And that's when Thomas applied his thoughts from his indie game to Mutant.
But he modified it a lot.
It
was a DICE 100 system in the beginning, and then he went to DICE Pool. And he had a DICE 100 version in the early... I think so. Well, he might hit me on the head.
He's not here.
But in the beginning, we playtested it. In the beginning, it was very, very... I mean, it's deadly as it is. And it was
really...
You kind of degrade because you sort of rot and you lose your skills. But in the beginning, it was super deadly. So we had a playtest.
We playtested for a year, actually.
Yeah, and the first playtest we had, someone was a crusher and hit some guy. And he failed... And he degraded so much that he almost died on the spot. The guy hitting.
Yeah.
And we were like, I think we need to tweak this. But I mean, the general principles is from...
Yeah, and I think he got some ideas from something called Urchin.
Yeah, also. And there's also a game called, what's it called?
The Quiet Year?
Oh, right.
And a lot of... So those games influenced Mutant Year Zero a lot.
Yeah. I think one of the things I loved about getting into Mutant Year Zero... was the trailer video that went out with it. And he had this just great video, and you had this character you were following, and then right at the end he's just shot dead. I just thought, I love this game without having played
it's a way to reinforce how brutal this
thing
is.
I just thought it was really good.
It's actually the second trailer. We had a Swedish trailer as well. You remember that one?
With the
Globe Arena.
It
was much more... it's simpler, but it was pretty nice to watch.
It's nice.
It's interesting you mention the quiet year, because I think the thing that we both love about the engine generally, but particularly for me, Coriolis, because I've never played Mutant Year Zero, but what we like about it is that sort of mix of kind of traditional usual RPGing and the indie narrative-y
and
it's a really nice balance of those two
I
things.
I think that's the spot we try. I mean, and that's mostly Thomas doing. That's the spot we try to hit. I mean, in Sweden it's called Neo-Trub, new traditional gaming. It's like inspiration from indie games, but with a traditional core.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can see obvious Apocalypse Now, Apocalypse World, in the game as well.
I love the spell of napalm in the morning.
I do too. But I mean, we try to do it a bit more accessible, and I think that's the sweet spot we're trying to find.
And easy to start. You should create your character in like 20 minutes or something, you evolve in the game.
I think one of the things
reading your whole book and
one of the things I love about the game, Mutant as well as Coriolis, is that the whole character generation thing forces you to define your character and your group as a group. And one of the games we played before, I think, might have been Fate, where again you're writing down on your card what your key issue was. You gave it to the next person, you then said how they work with, and it had that kind of feel to it, because there was certainly a period in our gaming back in the day, quite a while ago now, but where every game was a PvP player versus player thing. And
we got rid of those players.
We did get rid of those players, that's true.
They're buried under
But I love that the focus being on generating that backstory and giving you those hooks right at the start, which I think is really, really
you said to me at one point the thing you didn't like about Coriolis was enforcing the character relationships between the crew.
Well,
you said you had to come out through role play.
You didn't like that.
This is just
Well, you guys have obviously listened to all the podcasts, so you've heard my comment. So I think there was just a thing about being a bit, it felt a bit prescriptive sometimes. And we had a long debate about it. Matt necessarily didn't agree. I think part of it was driven by the fact that our very first game, I only got 2 experience points. And the second game, I got 6 or 7. So it's all right. So I don't mind it.
But I think some of the relationships in Coriolis actually could be a little bit tighter or better written, I think. I think in general, the ones in Mutant Year Zero are more tight. Well, in Coriolis, we had the right idea, but it's a little bit more loose.
I think my comment, my thought was, there are some of them that says, for your character, somebody else's character thinks something about you. Which it could have just been that you think that character thinks something about you.
I actually kind of agree that they're not ideal, but I think if you go with that with the principle, you can get it to work.
Work
good.
It out, absolutely.
But I'm not necessarily going by those by word. But actually, side stories, Coriolis was a Fate game from the beginning. We have Costa wrote a whole Fate rule set.
Yeah, for 3 years.
It's all in the bin.
I heard the pain.
Just publish it anyway.
I mean, Coriolis actually had I think it was this rules. It's like the fourth rule set.
Fifth.
Yeah.
I think so. We had a 2d6 plus.
Yeah. Barbarians of Lemuria version.
We had 2d6 plus skill. And then we had 2d6 plus Barbarians of Lemuria.
Yeah.
And then we had dice 20 system.
Yeah.
And then we had. Fate, four, and then Mutant Year Zero.
So we tried a lot of. I mean, Coriolis has been was for a lot of years was a problem project within our group, because we could never really specify exactly what kind of rules set we wanted to do, because the original rules sold out, so we had to do something new.
Yeah, that was the problem from the beginning. So when we have internal arguments in the firm. And the first was about doing Svavelvinter or Mercy of the Icons.
Yeah, the campaign.
The campaign.
Yeah.
Because the rules were out in the... they were already published.
Yeah.
The old Jan Ring rules. Thank God we did Svavelvinter.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So it's been a long, long development time for Coriolis. For good and ill. I mean, it's... Yeah.
Are you happy with it now?
I'm happy with it. I think it's. I think it has a lot of potential. I think it's a great game, but I think it has. Personally, I think we have different views on it internally, but it's. It's a bit. What do you say? loosey-goosey. It's a bit all over the place.
Yeah.
It's a lot of background. It's a lot of... It's a good sandbox. I think it's probably the least focused game we've made. And if we would have done it today...
Yeah, what would we have done?
We would be different.
I think we would have fewer group concepts, I think.
We probably have focused more.
Yeah, and we would have the star system generation and stuff in the rulebook to make it more...
Yeah, probably, because the thing is, we were kind of bound by it's being a lot of lore, a lot of setting. So we decided we're going to use all the lore, put it in the game.
Yeah.
But having all this lore we expanded a lot as well. But having all this lore makes it also a bit of a threshold to get by.
I've noticed a few. I mean, I love the lore. I read it all the way through, which I rarely do for rule books.
Yeah.
So that's good. But I noticed a lot of people were saying this is too much to get my head around.
Yeah.
But I wonder if the key to that is that there are a lot of factions, because that I remember. When I read it the first time, it's like
there are a bit too few. I mean, too many.
There's so many factions, right? And then a lot of kind of descriptions are about kind of how they interact and what's kind of going on between them and all of that. And suddenly you get this Game of Thrones kind of thing where there's a lot of intrigue and stuff going on, right? But if you start cutting away, and I noticed in your pod that you've kind of focused on a few factions where you talk about those specifically, and for me it's been the same.
Yeah,
you know?
I think you have to do it.
Yeah, so I was going to say that I don't think that's necessarily a weakness of the game at all.
No,
it gives a GM the scope to choose the bits that they really fancy
if
and
can,
then dig into it.
If you can sort through it, right?
Yeah.
If you've kind of had the time to kind of go through and choose... I think that's the key here, right? I really like the lore. I love all of the stuff that's in there. I think there's a lot of kind of ideas that's popping into your head when you read it. But you then, at some point, as a GM, you have to kind of figure out, what's my Coriolis, right?
Yeah.
What part of this will I use?
Yes.
So, what I thought was particularly interesting is their coining of a phrase, which I really like. On the bulletin boards and on the internet, we hear a lot about old school gaming. But what the way they described Coriolis and the other Year Zero engine games is neo-trad or neo-traditional.
Yeah.
And I really like that, because they are really trying to merge all the best bits of the games we enjoyed, but with a modern sense of simplicity to the gameplay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing I really love about it, and it's not unique to the pre-Allegan games, but they do it very well, is the way the game is designed forces you to build groups together with some original, some initial links and backstory, and that the whole collaborative character generation side of it is a real plus, is a real bonus to it. I think one of the few other games that does it, perhaps... you know, as well, or perhaps even better than that, is Fate, where and I've only ever run the one, or only ever played the one campaign of Fate, and that's the one that we still haven't finished.
We ran out of time at the weekend to finish
that. We did. But in that, the whole idea that you are writing elements of the other person's character and how you know them on that person's kind of character record is a real, really good, and it kind of goes a bit further into that collaborative narrative storytelling genre of game, because then, you know, you as a player then have to work with what another player has said for you. But that works really well. But I think perhaps slightly more mainstream, neo-traditional, the way Coriolis, for example, and Mutant Year Zero and the game, you know, the Year Zero games, the way that they help you build up your background, help you build your ship or your arc, in Forbidden Lands, your stronghold, as it will be. I love that. It's great. Because, you know, there's too many times in the past where, I think player versus player can be a lot of fun, but actually if you do it too much, it becomes a bit of a strain and a bit of a bore sometimes. And I love the way they've done it in the free
league. Yeah, I think you're right. I think player versus player can be great if that's what everybody wants to do. But... I think some of the frustrations we experienced as young gamers is where one or more of us, or two or more of us, I should say, shared a concept of where the game was going to go. A third person brought the character that they'd invented at home to the table, and that was an entirely different character. And either the first two would have to
change their stories to fit in with the new character, or very often the new character was off doing their own thing, and we were never really getting the team gelling together as we might have hoped. And I think a lot of that is actually, or a lot of the improvement in the Coriolis games is due to the Neo bit, making character generation actually really simple. So,
and once, fun, you know, back and, in the day, and fun. It's not a chore. You know, some games are so long-winded, it becomes a pain in the ass to roll up a new character, particularly once you've rolled up a lot or you've played it for a long time.
Robin Laws calls it homework, and I feel that it takes on the feeling of homework as opposed to a fun bit of creation. Whereas, I tell you, there's an interesting thing I'm thinking about for Saturday's game at Dragon Meet, actually, which is, obviously, it's quite good fun for a team to get together and to generate their relationships. But that's what takes the time in Coriolis now. Yeah. Creating the character is really quick. So I thought what I might do is give people a card with their names and their relationships to the other characters, but actually give them an opportunity to create their own character just to show how quick it can be.
I think my only concern with doing that at something like Dragon Meet is you've got so little time. And if you've got players who want to play the game who are brand new, know nothing about it, you might find it takes longer than you think.
So I think I've worked out a plan to do it. So yeah. What I'll do is I won't be given the opportunity to select their talents, because that's the bit that takes the reading and the thinking about, as well as the discussion between the thing. But I thought it might be fun just to say, okay, here are the things. There aren't any stats. This is how you choose your stats. Choose what you want.
That's not a bad idea.
So that, you know, they've got a character that they've at least partially built. The setup, their relationships with each other, which I'm hoping will make, you know, they will be actually a slightly PvP game, but also they'll be set up as a team already. I'll do that because, you know, we haven't got time to organise all of that. But no. I thought we could show them just how simple, if you like, the homework bit of the character creation is, and hopefully encourage people that haven't tried the game to give it a go once they've seen how easy it is to roll up characters.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. I mean, good luck. I hope it goes well. I think I am going to kind of stick. Now, that wasn't supposed to
stick
be sarcastic.
To your pre-gens.
That wasn't supposed
go
to be
ahead.
Sarcastic
it
in
could,
the slightest.
I could crash and burn.
I don't think you will. I think you're absolutely right. And you'll probably get people who, aren't entirely unfamiliar with a Free Allegan game. We might get some, but you're likely to get an experienced role player, or at least really reasonably experienced role player anyway, because somebody who comes to one of these things to play is probably someone who's got a bit of role playing time under their belt. So yeah, go for it. Why not? If it doesn't work, don't do it next time. But
no, I'll have learnt my lesson next time. But given that I've still got to write the rest of the scenario,
well, so have I.
Actually, as much time that's taken up by character creation, the better. I can write a really short scenario.
It could be a character generation kind of seminar or exercise. But
listeners, if you're planning on coming to London and you're planning on joining the game, it really is a good scenario, even if I haven't quite finished it yet.
Yes. Never knowingly overprepared. That's us.
No.
Yeah. But yes, I think
where are we now? I guess we should be listening to the third and final part of the.
Well, I think there was one more thing that was really interesting coming out of that last segment of the interview that we listened to, which was the fact that they tried to run Coriolis in other ways. So they tried using fate rules to run Coriolis, and. It'll be interesting, you know Fate better than I do, but I've played it a little bit. How do you think the Fate rules might have worked for a game like Coriolis?
Well, it's interesting. You know, you asked them in that bit of the interview we've just heard about how happy are they with what they've produced, and they did talk about things they'd do differently now.
Yeah.
One of the things being that they thought it was actually a little bit background fluff heavy. And they put in all the fluff that they'd enjoyed from the game, and maybe what they do, they'd package it up differently, they'd make it a bit more focused, maybe do what they did with Year Zero in terms of creating, if you like, a different version of the game for each of the different aspects. And it made me think that actually a Fate version, because Fate is, you know, the mechanics all exist already, that would have been almost a book of fluff. And particularly because, you know, because Fate mechanics are actually really quite mechanics light, arguably. Some people think Fate's a very crunchy game, but the principles of Fate can be described in a few pages, even though the Fate rulebook's about 200. You know, I'm not sure how, you know, what they could do mechanically. They might have done something interesting with a prayer mechanic there, but I think it would have been all fluff and very little mechanics. And really, what sold me on Coriolis after you persuaded me to buy into it at the Kickstarter was the interesting mechanics. So I'm pleased that we didn't lose the year zero mechanics that Coriolis introduced to me.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, following on from that, once they'd got the, you know, the year zero engine up and running, they felt that they wanted to use different mechanics for each game, but ultimately ended up falling back on the year zero engine, presumably because it's, you know, it works so well.
Yeah, which is what they talk about in the next part of the interview. Well, you asked how far they could take it, and should we listen to their answers?
Yeah, let's do that.
One thing I wanted to ask guys about the Year Zero engine is there's quite a lot of games now that are based on that engine, and there's a couple in the pipelines. You've got Mechatron, you've got Forbidden Lands coming through, you've got plans for some other games, Tales from the Flood.
Things from the Flood, yeah.
Things from the Flood, yeah, yeah. And a 1970s spy game. I think my question is, how far do you think you can take the engine? So there's a lot of games there now running on that engine. How far can it go, do you think, before it needs revamping?
I can't say we do have the answer, really.
No. There's been a recent discussion about just the thing about using one engine and continuing using that.
Yeah, I mean it's a great engine. I mean,
in the beginning, we started out completely different. We started out, our philosophy in the beginning was every game should have its own engine. We actually switched this when we decided that Coriolis should use the Mutant Year Zero engine. Before that, every game had a separate engine.
Yeah.
And then when we did that and noticed that people were like, oh yes, finally, I know the rules. And we're like, oh, maybe it's a good thing.
But there's tweaks. The prayer mechanism is not the same as the push mechanism. The ones are not used. And in Tales, it's different too.
Yeah. They're all kind of adjusted. It's not taken as it is and pushed into each game, right?
But in the beginning, we changed everything. We had different core mechanisms.
Yeah, so
it wasn't dice pools, it was like...
But I mean, I've noticed that with my players, that it's really cool to just transition from one game to the next, and you kind of go like, yeah, okay, so this is the, you know, the push mechanic in this game, and these are the things that you get bonuses from, or, you know, whatever, in this game, but they relate to it really quickly.
Yeah.
I think for me, the big difference, so the two games that I've played, Mutant Year Zero and Coriolis, the big difference is you don't have the mutation point, feral point, I guess some kind of magic element for Forbidden Lands point that drives quite a lot of stuff in the games where you've got them.
Yeah.
And is actually a very important part of the mechanic. You don't have that in Coriolis in the same, you know.
No, that's true.
I guess the question I'm asking is there enough difference, or how do you see making the difference between games like Forbidden Lands, say, where you'd have a magic point driver and the mutant point driver in Mutant Year Zero? Is there a...
Yeah. It's difficult because, first of all, Forbidden Lands is still in development, so we're not...
Course.
I mean, it's done, but I think of our games, I think probably Mutant Year Zero is the most tight rules-wise of our games. Coriolis is a bit more... maybe flexible, and what we removed from Coriolis is the whole degradation mechanic.
You don't get
worse. I mean, you have the hit points instead.
And you don't have mutation points, which are sort of plot points.
Yeah.
That's how we've used them.
Yeah.
You know, you get in the final part of the Eden, and
huge.
I use like 10 mutant points to just crush Nissa's game mastering, and won the game.
Yeah, I mean, the big baddie. I mean,
but then you do run the risk as a player of dying instantly, though, don't you? If you're using a lot of mutant points.
Yeah.
It's almost like a superhero power. I mean, but it's... the question is, how should we go forward? Well, it's... I think Forbidden Lands, for example, is looking more towards Mutant Year Zero. And it's more like that. It's more about exploring
the survival landscape. You know.
And also the dangers of just, you know, you have to strike camp, you have to get food, you have to find foraging and so on.
And we've added the polydice, though.
Yeah, the polydice. That's a big new thing. It's because, I mean, retro fancy gaming, at least in Sweden, for us, it's like you want to have the polydice. The D6s are nice because it's a core mechanic, because it's simple, but being able to add nice polydice for some powerful stuff is a thing we like to tweak. I think we talked about it before we turn on the microphone. I mean, role-playing games, for me at least, is a lot about tactile, I mean, experience. I mean, physical experience at the table. And having, I mean, polydice is, I mean, they bring a certain feel to the game table. And just being able to have this, I mean, I personally love those, translucent dice.
Yeah.
Where it's like jewels almost.
Yeah.
And they're very, very like edgy. This old, edgy, what do you say? They're not rounded.
Sharp.
And those kind of dice for me instantly brings like this old school feeling. And that's, I mean, that's a thing you should, I think, as a game designer, think about. I mean, if you can bring that stuff, why not do it?
Yeah.
If it's good.
Historically, we had like in the old Drakar & Måne here in Sweden. I seem to remember you actually got like different colors in each box.
Yep.
So it was just random colors. So everyone's like, oh, you have a blue D4. That's amazing. Yeah. It's like, mine is red.
Yeah. So. Now, I'm going to ask this about Drakar & Dubinat. Sorry, this is another diversion. I always understood that the first edition of Drakar & Dubinat wasn't so much D&D, but RuneQuest rules.
It's a magic world. Magic world, which is an offshoot of... Well, it's actually Magic World. It's a translation. It's not even Swedish. It's a direct translation of Chaosium's Magic World.
Right. So that's a D100.
D100. BRP. And that's because all the games in Sweden, I mean, our base is BRP.
Yeah.
Basic Role Playing.
Yeah.
And that's always been necessary. So D&D has been a much, much lesser influence. So Basic Role Playing is like the base system.
D&D came in like a lot later, right?
Yeah.
And now it's actually kind of has a lot of ground.
No, it's much bigger now, but I mean, in the BRP is so much. So we have actually kind of struggled with it in the beginning when we introduced our Year Zero engine. A lot of because we introduced that in Mutant. And Mutant was one of these basic role playing games.
Yeah.
Mm. And the old fans, they were like, "Oh, I will never play Mutant without a D100."
What's the percentage of the success?
And it's like, we had a huge problem. We actually had to develop a hack, a BRP hack, and put it into the Swedish edition, which is not because we wanted to. We were so afraid that people wouldn't play our system. This is all in the past now, because now it's changed. But in the beginning, people were very hostile.
Yeah.
Did anyone use it, though?
I don't think anyone actually has used our BRP hack, to be honest.
No.
So I thought that was hilarious that they had to create a BRP version. And I wonder what a BRP version of Coriolis might have been like. I guess it would have been more like Call of Cthulhu than RuneQuest.
Yeah, I think it strikes me that one of the really great things about Coriolis and Mutant Year Zero is the fact that you have so few skill stats to cover such a wide range of stuff. And if you've got a percentile based system that kind of encourages you to have more skills. And actually having, so BRP might have expanded the skill list, and I think one of the great things about Coriolis is its skill list is set at, I don't know, how many is it? Is it 18 or something? Or, you know, 16? And no more. And that's really good. So, I mean, I love Cthulhu. You know, I'm a long standing Cthulhu GM and player over the years. But you end up with a list of skills as long as your arm, which is fine, but I like the simplicity of a game that moves away from that BRP approach and does something a bit neo-traditional, if we're going to start, start using that phrase now we've mentioned it.
And talking of the other changes they made, of course, I'm really interested in what they've got planned for, as they call them, the poly dice, the polyhedral dice, that they're going to add into Forgotten Lands, Forbidden Lands. So I'm going to be fascinated by what they produce in terms of mechanics for using those dice.
It will be interesting to see how they integrate that into the Year Zero engine.
Yeah. And then we can use it in the open gaming license, hopefully, that they will produce.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we'll talk more about, or we'll get Freya Gann to talk more about the open gaming license in our next episode.
Yeah.
Which will probably feature the last extracts from the interview that we haven't played yet. We've got about an hour recorded still that we've not heard anything from yet. So I'm sure there's some juicy nuggets in that bit of the interview, and we'll be sharing them in our next episode.
And that'll probably boil down into one episode once we've had a look at it and taken out the unnecessary bits where you're talking.
Yeah. Well, I've taken out quite a lot of the unnecessary bits where you were talking in what we've just heard. So it's only fair.
Well, I've kept those as a special Dave talks to the Free Legan guys reel. So I'll do a under the counter version of that one day.
Okay, we'll release that as a special bonus edition. Is that a bonus
really
edition or
boring.
Is it a punishment edition? I can't remember.
One or the other.
Right now, though, I guess we should close. I just want to remind everybody who wasn't listening at the beginning of this podcast about the survey that we've put online. We'd love to hear your opinions of Coriolis, of the Coriolis effect, and how we should be developing the podcast in 2018. And, of course, those of you who are coming to London to Dragon Meet this weekend, do come and seek us out. Join us for a game if there's seats available in the morning. We're both running at the same time.
Yep.
So there's two Coriolis games in the morning. And then in the afternoon, we'll be at the podcast zone, or indeed wandering around the stalls. But you'll see us by our Coriolis Effect t-shirts. Come and join us.
Yeah, we look forward to meeting you all there. And we should have a fabulous and fun day. But I think that's it from us for now. So it's goodbye from Matthew.
And it's goodbye from Dave.
And may the icons bless your southern rail trip to Dragon Meet.
Been listening to The Coriolis Effect, presented by Fiction Suit with the RPG Gods, with music by Stars on a Black Sea, used with permission of Free League Publishing. Imagery from NASA and the Hubble Space Telescope, brought to you by Wikimedia Commons. Typeface is Code by Font Fabric.